Good evening, everyone. As always, it's wonderful to practice together. Tonight, I want to continue looking at some aspects of our recently reworded vows. Specifically, our first vow: sentient beings are numberless. We vow to awaken as one. The first part about sentient being numberless is pretty obvious, but the vow itself is to awaken as one. So what exactly are we awakening to? It's not some kind of team building exercise where we meet in the Dharma room and support each other along the path to our own personal waking. It's something more than that. So tonight I want to talk a little bit about this question of awakening as one. I thought I'd begin in a place you probably would least expect: South Central Utah. I'm serious, so bear with me for a moment. Imagine you're hiking into a stand of aspen trees this time of year. This stand of trees is so large, it completely surrounds you everywhere you turn. It's a gorgeous fall day, like today was here in Seattle. And in every direction, all you can see are those beautiful, smooth white trunks and numberless golden leaves shimmering like jewels in the breeze. Quite a breathtaking sight. But the most amazing thing about it is what's hidden from our view. If somehow we could look beneath the ground, we might realize that it's not a forest at all. It's one single organism. The entire stand began as a single seed many thousands of years ago. And what now appears to be this huge forest of individual trees are actually genetically identical shoots sent up by one massive single root system. I'm sure some of you know about this. I believe it's considered to be the largest single organism on Earth, and scientists estimate that it weighs some 13 million pounds, and this single organism covers over 108 acres. So what does this have to do with our vow to awaken as one? Like this colony of aspens, looks can be deceiving. Most of us, at least when we first come to the Zen Center, think of ourselves only as separate individuals. And we fail to see our intimate connection to all things. Of course, we all feel some kind of affinity for our close friends and loved ones, but we still think of them as separate from us. It's just a question of proximity. For example, you might say to someone you like that we're close. But if I don't like you, I might tell myself I'm going to keep my distance from you. Our language actually contributes and supports this idea in so many ways that we're separate from each other. But whether we think of someone as close or distant, there's always some amount of perceived separation that we habitually operate out of. Seeing through this illusion of separateness is central to our Zen practice. So this is a very important thing to really realize more and more deeply as we continue to practice. As many of you have heard, if you've been around here for some time, in Zen we talk about two aspects of reality. We use teaching phrases like the relative and the absolute, or form and emptiness, like we used when we chanted the Heart Sutra a few minutes ago, to help us wake up to this aspect of inseparability of all things. So one aspect of our vow to awaken as one is to waken up to our oneness. To be really clear, this does not in any way deny our individuality. In the relative day-to-day sense, it's true that you and I are two. And equally true, in the absolute sense, we are also one. This is the teaching of Buddha's two truths. And embodying these two truths in harmony equally is our ongoing practice from moment to moment. Looking at it another way, or maybe going one step further, our vow to awaken one also, to awaken as one, also points to interbeing. One way of talking about interbeing is that each thing contains the whole, and the whole is in each thing. They're co-equals. You might have heard of Indra's net. Indra's net is a metaphor that illustrates this interconnection of all things while supporting individuality equally. The description of Indra's net is that there's this metaphorical cosmic net that stretches out infinitely in all directions across the cosmos. And on each knot in this net, a single jewel has been hung. And if we look really closely at each or any jewel, we can see the reflection of every other jewel. So the size of the net and the number of individual jewels are infinite. And the point of this metaphor is that all jewels appear in each and every jewel. If this all sounds confusing or too theoretical, don't worry about it too much. The core of Zen resides in our own direct experience, not particularly in philosophical ideas. It's our direct experience that is going to help us, and in turn help us help the world around us. Zen Master Sung San, our founding teacher, had a simple name for how we can put it into practice, and I'm sure the majority of you know what it is. He called it together action. By acting together, we actually manifest this truth. Each of us as individuals come together and we act as one. What I really want to talk about for the rest of this talk is that our group practice itself is structured around together action. So let's look at some of the ways our practice forms can help us awaken to this insight of Buddhism and Zen. When most of us come to the Zen Center for the first time, we're naturally focused on ourselves. For example, imagine coming into the Dharma room, everybody's sitting on their cushions. You might ask, when am I supposed to bow? Am I bowing correctly? And then when we sit down, am I meditating correctly? It's all self-referential at the beginning. And we also might ask some questions like, is this practice really going to help me, or am I just wasting my time sitting on this cushion for so long? Or a question I had when I first came to the Zen Center, what if these people are weirdos? And on and on. And of course, this is all completely natural. But as we settle into meditation and we become familiar with the forms, we might begin to notice something that wasn't initially so clear. We do everything together as one. We recite our vows together. We chant together. We sit together. During walking meditation, we walk together. And when we're at the Zen Center, we all wear the same gray color robes. So like that stand of aspens, or that aspen organism, we embody both our individuality and our oneness at the same time. Doing so helps us loosen our attachments to me first thinking. Me, mine. It keeps us from, as we say, othering things that we perceive as not me. And this habit of separating me from others or us from them begins to dissolve little by little. And when that happens, our innate compassion naturally appears. So now that we all know that together action's hardwired into formal practice, what does that mean for how each of us can fully act as one when we're participating in group practice? This isn't comprehensive, and I didn't want this to turn into a forms workshop, but I want to point out a few things that might, if you've been practicing a long time, remind you of what we're really doing when we're practicing together in a group. Or if you're newer, it might make you realize this together action aspect of our practice. The first point I want to make is keep in mind that you are supporting the practice of others while they are supporting yours. The first time I realized that group practice is more than a number of individuals doing meditation in the same room was at one of my very first retreats. After 3 days of sitting in silence, I was absolutely astounded by how close I felt to everyone, even people I'd never met or spoken to. You might have had the same reaction at a retreat. And during that retreat, I became aware that seeing everyone sit so earnestly encouraged me to do the same. Actually, it was even more than that. It was almost like we were all residing in the same safe, protective cocoon. This felt like a gift to me, and it made me in turn want to give that gift back to others. So I tried my best not to fidget. And when I needed to stand or change my position, I tried my best not to do it in a distracting way. This experience showed me that practicing for others also nourishes my own practice. This still feels kind of like a magical thing after all these years that I've practiced, but I know that a number of you have had that same feeling. It's palpable. Next, many of us associate practice with the sitting aspect. Sitting meditation. We might think of walking meditation simply as a way to stretch our legs and give our bodies a break. And that's true, but it's not the whole story. Walking is much more than that. When we walk, each of us getting up off our cushion come together and form a single line, and we walk as one. Our individuality doesn't disappear, but our interconnection is made much more obvious when we wake up to this. Probably about a century ago, maybe more, someone asked the great Korean master Kyung Ho about how true nature really functions. And Kyung Ho's answer was very interesting. He said it functions like a caterpillar. When one foot moves, they all move. So Kyung Ho's telling us that despite appearances to the contrary, everything is inseparable from everything else, and everything affects everything else. So when we do walking meditation, you might keep in mind that this truth is acted out. And if you do it, and you really look deeply into that ritual of acting it out, as well as stretching your legs and giving your body a break and refreshing yourself from your sitting practice, you will pay a little bit more attention, maybe, to the form of keeping that distance, just short distance behind the other person, folding your hands at your waist, and looking at the back of the person in front of you. Then we actually enact that single organism aspect of ourselves. Walking meditations also shows us a way of bringing our practice off the cushion. As long as we're able to walk, we can do it any time. We often think of walking simply as a way to get from here to there, from one place to another. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, that time in transit often we think of as kind of a second-rate period of time. We're always coming from somewhere and we're always going to somewhere else. But when we walk as a practice, it can intimately connect us to the whole world. We can let go of our discriminative thinking and simply feel at one with the earth crunching under our feet. And we can listen to the bird song reveal the truth of the moment. Chanting, which was my very favorite aspect of practice from the very beginning. But we all have our favorites, not that that stops us from doing the other practices. Chanting is a practice that beautifully helps us stay present moment to moment, and it gives us immediate feedback when our mind strays for just a second. So when we chant, please chant with us, even if you're not quite sure of the words. Chanting together is more important than chanting perfectly. Just do your best, 100%. For years, when I worked on guest night, which was either a Tuesday night or a Thursday night, for years and years and years, when I met with new students coming to Blue Heron for the very first time, I usually encouraged them to chant with us. Kind of a presumptive, kind of a presumption of mine, but I urged them to do it. And I told them, I know you don't know the chants, but chant with us anyway. And I was always heartened when I saw their lips moving and joining in. So, despite the facts that they wouldn't know the first thing about our chants, they can still fully participate in together action. This is a very important point. Another point about chanting, which I think most of us know, but it's really good to remember, it's a practice of listening. If you listen closely, you might be able to hear each individual voice in the room, and at the same time, one single voice. And if you listen really carefully, you can listen also to the one single voice echoing through the universe. Try it sometime. It's pretty amazing. So when you experience that, you know for yourself that each thing is in the whole, and the whole is in each thing. This chanting of the individual voices melding into one, another way to see our individuality manifest itself as one. I also want to say something about the compassion chanting that we do on the first Sunday of each month. When someone you know is suffering and you add their name to our online altar, we do Kwantsen Bosal chanting for them. And likewise, when someone you know has recently died and you add their name to our altar, we do Jijang Bosal chanting for them. There's a subtle practice point about this that I want to mention since we're talking about some of these forms. Our tradition is to chant for individuals rather than categories of people, such as chanting for all beings who are suffering in a certain kind of way. The point being that when we chant for one person, we all are already chanting for all beings because each being exists in the whole and the whole exists in each thing. I want to make it really clear that both approaches are incredibly admirable because they open up our compassion. But when we chant for people we know and love, that comes from our direct connection and our spontaneous, compassionate response to their situation, rather than from more from a conceptual place. Finally, it's all too clear since we're having this talk online and we're all on Zoom that many of us haven't yet returned to in-person practice at the Zen Center. So not all of the examples we've looked at can directly apply to online practice, but we still can practice together as one when we're online by bowing to the practice leader as we log in, by joining in when we do vows and chants, by minimizing our movements when we're sitting so we don't disturb the practice of others any more than we need to, and by turning off our video camera when we need to make any kind of distracting movements or get up and change position. The point I want to get across is really, if you haven't already, or maybe during the course of this terrible pandemic we've been living through for the past couple of years, some of our forms are foggy to all of us. So we're kind of trying to, especially as we start practicing in person at the Zen Center again, I just wanted to talk about this vow to awaken as one and see how we can actually bring that about as part of our practice. So please, let's do our best to express our complete true nature with together action, so we can embody both our individuality and our oneness in complete harmony and help this world. Thanks.